Dreamer, A Dreams of Caimage Short Story by Selah J. Taesong. Stagia woke in the middle of the night, her body trembling with fear, her gown drenched in cold sweat. The blue ice lights that never sleep were distant to her eyes. The ice slab of her bed was cold and soothing, but her heart was beating fast and hot. Though she was only 6 years old, she did not cry out for her mother, but sat still and silent, the dream replaying in her mind. Narrow, dark tunnels, a maze, like the secret passages into the palace of Ascalon. It seemed she was rushing headlong through them, terrified to go on, but unable to stop. Always ahead shone a light she had never seen in waking life, yellow instead of blue. The tunnels narrowed, snarls and howls rose in the distance, but still she could not stop. Then came a piteous wailing, and Stagia was streaking toward it, propelled by fear for the source of the cry and anger at its predicament. The tunnel opened into a vast blue cavern. A small child sat at its center, crying, bathed in the yellow light. Stagia rose from her bed and stood in the darkness. She drew Tijas from the surrounding ice. The flood of coldness and life comforted her. Most did not experience Tijas until they were 10 years or older, but at 5 years, Stagia had been able to draw it, and by now she could do small tasks, like making ice light. But she did not need a light to see her dim chamber. With Tijas, the dream returned, and Stagia could see every vivid detail as if it were a veil between her eyes and the real world. In the dream, she stood on her mulberry hide rug, staring at the shadowy wardrobe and the dark mirrors of her dressing table, then walked out of her room, past the snoozing guard, and down the empty corridors of the palace. Stagia, awake, followed her dream, navigating the dark halls by the vision the dream cast over them. Her heart was still pounding, and she took timid, silent steps, creeping past open doors and down the winding steps of the palace, all the way to the foot of the king's bridge. There, unbeknownst to her, she picked up a shadow. Someone was following her. She stole across the bridge and up wide, steep lanes all the way to Market Avenue on the top of the island. All of Ascalon was silent. This was the darkest hour when even the guildless slept. Stagia had been to market before with her guards and her sisters, but never beyond. Only the dream guided her down narrow footpaths to Grimshore and the Bridge of Prosperity. Only the dream urged her across the long bridge, past the lapping dark waters of the immense Lake Lintock, and into the tunnel that led to the mines. The dream cast a yellow light in the distance, drawing Stagia up tunnels that were in truth pitch dark, past the ore bins, past drills and untapped veins of metals and minerals, and into the wild outer tunnels. Stories told by Tudors and her sisters, tales of dangerous beasts and swift, deadly cave-ins, brought back her cold sweat and made her tremble so she could hardly walk. As the tunnels narrowed, she began to hear the faint footsteps of someone behind her, the occasional scrape of metal on rock. The sound was swallowed by snarls and hisses, snuffling and growling coming from the darkness as if wild beasts lurked at every turn. Howlers could cause cave-ins with the deep, echoing howls that sounded in the distance. And she knew from the stories that the worst dangers here were silent, pit vipers and giant carnivorous fungi. Rising above the cacophony, the plaintive wails of a lost and frightened child drew Stagia on. Even if she had not been under the spell of her peculiar dream, Stagia would have continued. She could never leave a hurt animal alone. In the safety of palace and city, she was forever finding little strays and bringing them back to her quarters, much to her sister's dismay. At last, the tunnel opened into a cavern more brilliant than the brightest ice light, ceilinged in blue more pure than the finest lapis. The lost child sat at its center, a pitiful little thing, dirty and naked, clutching a threadbare blanket, his hair in tangles, bathed in the yellow light. As Stagia walked toward the babe, Tijas slipped from her grasp. She did not yet have an adult's finesse and control. The dream faded and everything went black, but she could still hear the child's sobs. Stasia drew Tijas again, but the light did not reappear. She made an ice light and saw the reality of the cavern. It was small and dark, just like the other caves in the outer tunnels. The little boy, startled by her light, stopped crying, though tears still streamed down his cheeks. He stood to Stasia's waist and toddled toward her uncertainly. "Shh, I'll take care of you," Stasia said, taking the babe in her arms, holding him like her sisters would hold her when she cried. It did not occur to Stasia to wonder who he was, or how he got all the way to the outer tunnels, or why the dream had led Stasia to him. She cradled him and sang a little lullaby, wiping away his tears with the hem of her web-silk dress. He quieted and grew warm and heavy in her arms. She began to feel drowsy, and her ice light dimmed as Tijas ebbed with the heat. A figure stepped into the cavern and loomed over them. Frightened wide awake, Stasia scrambled to her feet, clutching the babe closer to her chest. He began to cry again. "Princess, you should come back to the palace now. It is dangerous here." Stasia brightened her ice light, trying to see his face. She wondered if she could run faster than him while still holding the little boy. "Who are you?" she whispered.
"Glace, son of Captain Dalen. Please come along, princess."
Stasia began to breathe again. She dropped to the cavern floor, settling the babe on her lap. She could see the intruder now, and remembered having seen him in the palace. Captain Dalen was head of her father's guard, and his son was a whole 12 years old. He was tall and strong and learned, but he certainly did not have authority to tell Stasia what to do and where to go. She straightened her spine and assumed Maudit's most regal tone. "You may be dismissed, Glace. I have everything under control here." She could hear the smile in his voice as he said, "Princess, the outer tunnels are not something anyone has under control. You must come away now. You can bring your little foundling, but you must come, otherwise our fathers will be very angry." He had a point. Life was much more difficult when father was angry. "Her foundling? Do you know who he is?" Stasia asked. He shook his head. "Some guildless whelp left for dead by starving parents, most likely." His heartless words fascinated Stasia. He was very tough not to be touched by such a sad tale or the babe's endless stream of tears. He had to be making it up. No parents could possibly leave such a precious little thing to die. Could they? "Then he is mine now, and I am yours. I found him, and you found me. We both have a foundling." His voice was smiling again. "Come along then, little foundling. Double quick, march!" She stood up, holding her foundling. He was heavy. She said, "Now you pick me up." She wondered if he could. Giant as he was, together they might be too heavy for him. Glace scooped them both up in his arms and held them, like an armful of baby slink, pressed against his chest. Stasia giggled, and he walked all the way down through the mines and into Iskallon like that. He did not stop to rest, even once. He carried them right up the palace steps. The city was waking up, and the halls of the palace streamed with people. Glace had scarcely gone past the first staircase when two guards, marching hurriedly in the opposite direction, came to a dead stop before them, mouths gaping. One recovered himself and turned and ran back into the palace, and the other began to scold Glace. Stasia's newfound friend set her and her foundling down and stood quiet, listening to the guard. Stasia stayed quiet, too. These were father's guards, and she could not command them. Then father and Maudit and several of her other sisters arrived, and the scolding blossomed into an uproar. Stasia stood amazed.
She had never seen them so upset. The babe in her arms began to cry, frightened by all the noise. She rocked him and cooed to him under her breath. She waited for a chance to explain and felt her foundling growing heavier and heavier as she grew more and more tired. At last her legs crumpled beneath her and she sat down on the floor and yawned right in Maudit's face. Anger faded to bemoaning of what horrors could have befallen her, except for Father, who stepped aside with Glace for a time, while Maudit cosseted Stasia and cursed her guard for falling asleep. Stasia wondered if the guard would be punished and felt guilty. That would be her fault. Father returned and ordered everyone away except Maudit and Glace. "Take that pitiful thing back where it belongs," he added. Stasia clutched her foundling close. "No, he's mine. I found him," she tried to explain. Father knelt before her, a scowl mixed with a look of fear. He had never before looked afraid like that, and it made Stasia afraid. "Stasia, you have been very bad. You must never, never leave the palace without my consent. The child must be returned to his parents." This horrified her. If Glace was right, which he must be, since he seemed to have knowledge of such things, wouldn't the parents simply leave her foundling to die again? Stasia squeezed him tightly, and he began to cry, as though he were aware of the weight of the decision being made. And Stasia, overwhelmed by the horror of what had happened to the child, and what would happen if they took him away, began to cry as well. "I dreamed of him," Stasia forced out between sobs. "I dreamed, and I found him, and he is mine. Nobody wants him but me. Let me have him." The adults were silent for so long that Stasia stopped crying and rubbed at her eyes and looked up. Father and Maudit were staring at each other over her head, their eyes locked together, and Stasia realized that they were sharing thoughts, keeping secrets. That made her angry. Then everything happened at once. Father's arms scooped Stasia up, and Maudit's arms scooped up the foundling, and Stasia was whisked away, screaming and kicking. Later, in Father's study off the grand throne room, Stasia sat small in one of the big ice chairs before a broad ice desk. Her feet dangled, her arms were crossed, and her lower lip was sore from pouting. "Stasia," Maudit said gently, beside her. The eldest of 13 sisters, Maudit was much older than her, already an adult. She had raised Stasia after their mother had died, and her presence comforted the little girl in the face of Father's cold anger. "You must tell us more of your dream, Stasia. This is very important." Father was not sitting behind his desk. He was pacing, stopping occasionally to tower over Stasia. He remained silent. Only Maudit had spoken so far. His eyes were dark with anger. The fear seemed to have vanished. "I'll tell you, if you give me back my foundling." Father leaned down until his face was right in front of Stasia's. "This is not open for discussion, child. Answer your sister." Stasia was so angry and frustrated and helpless that she began to cry again. "At least tell me what will become of him," she sobbed. Father looked at Maudit, and again Stasia knew they were thinking together behind her back. She felt the slight chilly sensation of Tejas being used. She wished that she were better trained, good enough to push her mind into theirs and know what they were thinking. Then Father withdrew, and Maudit lifted Stasia from her chair and cradled her in her arms. Father continued to pace behind his desk. Stasia sat stiffly at first, then began to melt into Maudit's broad lap. "Iskallan is not lawless, little one." Maudit's breast was warm, her voice strong and soothing. "There will be an inquiry. If his parents really did leave him in the outer tunnels, they will be punished, and he will be placed with a family that will care for him. But, Stasia, it is likely that he only wandered away. Just as you did, Stasia. Would you want Glace to be able to keep you and never see any of your sisters again? It is the same thing. Stasia considered that question seriously. Glace had been very brave, as brave as she, to follow her into the wild tunnels and rescue her and the foundling. But she would not want to belong to him. Never see her sisters again.
No,
she whispered against Maudit's breast. There, you see, it will all work out for best. But Maudit, if his parents did leave him, can I?
Enough! Father's temper finally exploded, startling both princesses. I have catered long enough to your childish whims. This is not behavior befitting a princess, Stasia. Sit up in your own chair and stop pouting.
Stasia thought she saw Maudit glare at Father as she was placed in the ice chair. Stasia's own anger, and much of her concern for the foundling, had dissolved in Maudit's lap, and now all she felt was fear. She tried to sit up straight and look like a princess, wondering if Father would punish her dreadfully.
Now, you will tell me about this dream of yours.
She tried to. It was hard to remember at first, and Father grew angrier and angrier as she trembled and stuttered. Desperate, she drew Tijas from her cold seat, and suddenly the dream came back, vivid as if she were still sleeping. And then she was able to speak clearly, to tell Father and Maudit of the shining yellow light and the blue cavern and the crying babe. She told them of waking and seeing the dream again and following it. When she finished, silence filled the small room. At last Father broke it, stroking his smooth beard as he spoke in serious tones. Stasia, if you have another dream like this, you come to me or one of your sisters and tell us right away. Do you understand?
Yes, Father,
Stasia whispered, though she didn't, not really. Run along now, Stasia, Maudit said. You are already quite late for your lessons. She did understand that she wasn't to be punished. She thought about her foundling and missed him. Perhaps later she could speak to Maudit alone and charm her sister into allowing her to keep him. Yes, Maudit. She scrambled down from her chair and hurried out of the room. She stopped just beyond the door, out of sight, and listened. She knew that listening at doors was naughty, but so was keeping secrets, and she could tell that Maudit and Father were keeping secrets. Secrets about her. Maudit was speaking again. Can it be, Father? Can it be true?
Only time will tell, Maudit. We will have to observe her closely. If she really is a dreamer, we can't know how it will affect her. There will be none to train her.
It will be hard for her, Maudit agreed. But think of the advantage, Father. If all of her dreams are prophetic, this one was insignificant, but in time, perhaps she will be able to direct them. We might gain knowledge of attacks from Kron before they happen.
Do you suppose it is because of her mother's...
Father's pacing footsteps approached the door, and Stasia, losing her nerve, hurried away. In the corridor outside the throne room, she nearly ran right into Glace. She looked up at him, curious. Were you punished? She asked. With all that anger, Father was bound to punish someone. She was already worried about her guard. She couldn't bear it if Glace were punished, when he had been so brave.
No, Princess. Your father told me to accompany you. Where are we off to?
Lessons, Stasia said, her nose wrinkling to show what she thought of that.
Come along, then. Double quick, march!
He began to march, as the warriors in the training square did during drills. Stasia laughed and tromped after him, trying to imitate his huge strides with her tiny legs. She had to walk twice as fast as he, and soon she was breathless. When they reached her quarters, they were both laughing, and her tutor scolded them and tried to send Glace away.
"Sorry, sir, I can't go. Orders of the king. I'm to stay by her side, always."
The end.